Is there a John Luck Pickard here?
Stardate 97662.32. Guys, we're drinking Earl Grey decaf.
Gotta be decaf.
One of us is.
Mars is on fire to this day. We're talking about Picard. It's Star Trek Discovery Pod. I'm Mike Moody. With me is
Clyde Haynes.
And
Grant Davis.
We're going to offer our instant reactions to the first episode of Star Trek Picard tonight, breaking down the episode from our various perspectives and doing it live on YouTube.
Get all them fingers crossed.
Our first time doing a live stream. Hopefully it's going well. We're going to be on YouTube. We're on Twitch. Where else are we? Facebook, Periscope.
Periscope.
Just failing everywhere.
How is Periscope still a thing?
I don't know. I thought it went away. And then I was like, oh, it's still a thing. I guess we'll be there.
Well, hey, if it's there, we should be there.
The broadcast will also be available as a podcast on Apple or anywhere you listen to podcasts.
But the broadcast will not be televised.
No?
The revolution will not be televised.
Someday. Someday. Hold out hope.
I'm working. I'm working on it.
But just visit StarTrekPod.co for all of your subscription links and to find out more about the podcast. Grant, before we dive into Picard, can you tell everyone how they can support this little Star Trek podcast?
The first way of supporting us, please take the time to go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating, write a little bit of a review, and just 2-3 sentences about what you love about the podcast. That really helps boost our visibility with everyone, and we super appreciate it. And it's free. That's a free way to support us.
It's a free way to support us.
There's another free way. You can tell other people about this podcast. Go and spread the word. Find other people that love Star Trek as much as you, who are as invested in Star Trek Discovery and Picard and the upcoming Section 31, that animated show that I think they're doing. Maybe, maybe not.
Lower Decks.
Maybe the Quentin Tarantino joint.
No.
I don't know. But if they're into Star Trek, please tell them to come check this out and join in the discussion with us. We would love to engage with them as well. And then one last way you guys can help support us is patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod to make a per episode pledge. That means you give us $1 or $2 per episode. And in exchange, we will occasionally do some little bonus exclusive episodes for you guys. We have a private Slack channel if you donate at least $2 to our little venture here. And we even have some stretch goals that I know that... I've at least been volunteered for one.
Let's talk about that first one.
Sure. If we reach 100 patrons, which I think we're at like 34 or somewhere
about
around
34,
there.
35, yeah.
If we reach 100 patrons by the time we hit episode 5, I'm going to Clyde my head.
I have said that if that happens, Grant, I will shave my head with you.
Oh, just camaraderie.
It's like a Thursday for me, but yeah, meaningful. I'll shave my head.
Yeah,
I even volunteered him for that, so.
I'm going to go full Picard, I guess. You know, slow your roll, donate around episode 6, and I think we'll be good to go.
I got to warn you, shaving your head for the first time in the winter, it's not a great idea,
You wear hats all the
time. Yeah, you'll be all right.
This is Texas. I think it was 70 degrees today, so I'm hoping I'll be okay.
Okay, well, not only will Grant shave his head, but he'll do it live on the stream.
I will do it live.
Yeah.
I will cry the whole time. I have not told my wife that I even
His wife will be, and your wife will be present during the stream.
That'll be worse.
And your children will do it at the house.
Let's call her my ex-wife at that point.
Okay. We're going to talk about Picard, guys, the first episode. Episode 1, titled Remembrance, written by Akiva Goldsman, James Duff, story by those guys, Michael Chabon and Christian Beyer, directed by Hanel M. Culpepper, who also directed a few great episodes of Discovery last season. Quick episode description. Oh, and if you're watching us, feel free to drop a comment in the chat wherever you're watching us. If it's YouTube, Twitch, Periscope, wherever, just drop a comment. And we're leaving Grant in charge of looking at the comments tonight. So if your comment doesn't get brought up on stream,
his fault.
At Baron Von Grant on Twitter is where to complain.
I'm not going to like interject through this whole episode.
No,
sure you are.
Here's what we'll do. Towards the end of the stream, we'll have like a little Q&A session with the comments. But if you see something that's relevant to what we're talking about, feel free to bring it up.
Hyde Claines does have a good comment here.
Does
here
he now?
Go. Yeah, here he said, go. Picard unsheathed his massive... Wait, no. Should I keep reading this?
No.
Hyde Claines is Clyde's alter ego who writes slash fic for Star Trek.
Slash fic.
If this is your first time hearing us, I would say go back to the first season of Discovery, listen to our episodes, and you'll kind of get the ongoing gag about my slash fic.
Gag.
Gag. In quotes.
Go. Here we go.
Okay, so quick episode description for Remembrance, episode one of Picard. Picard old, but still hot. Federation fucked. Romulans and androids got beef, maybe. Picard's on the case after a few strolls around the vineyard while wearing some very nice leisure wear and slipping some Earl Grey. Short description. Picard back, baby.
Okay.
TLDR, he is there for a little bit of...
It's a lot.
All right, I want to hear... What do I want to hear? I want to hear some... hot takes.
Hot takes!
Here we go.
Who wants to go first with their hot takes on Picard Episode 1, Star Trek Picard? We've been waiting 20 years for this shit. Give it to me.
Hey, so I got to agree with the comment. I did notice that Picard was old, but I didn't care, right?
Yeah.
Like, even running around, kind of looking like he's about to have a heart attack at any minute, I wasn't quite ready for that.
I think that was intentional.
I know, yeah. But opening shot of the Enterprise, I was kind of in from that moment. Like, that was a moment. Or,
was that the D or the E?
It
was a D.
D.
From
it
the
was
show.
A D. Yeah, yeah. So it was, and it was him having a nightmare dream or whatever. Mm. But just seeing the Enterprise, I was thinking, yeah. Like, it's, we talk a lot of Discovery, but this is different because it's an extension of this world that we all knew. So I was in from that moment. I'm kind of waiting for them to get to a ship, any ship, some ship.
I knew that was going to be something with you.
You
I knew
you
it.
Know I like yeah. the ships.
You like space. You like the ships.
I'm big on space opera.
Pretty earthbound this episode.
But that was okay. Yeah.
Relationships.
No. Relationships are good ships. No, I really like this episode.
Warships.
Warships or worshipping.
Let's keep just derailing with different ships.
Chocolate ships.
chocolate ships.
There you go.
But I thought that this was a great kind of opening episode of setting the foundation. My favorite thing about shows like this is the team up, right? So kind of when you look at how the teams get together and you establish that, I think, not to talk about another Star reference, but that was part of my concern with The Mandalorian, was the team up didn't really happen until... whenever.
The Mando Whatian?
I know.
You had problems with that show?
I didn't say it was problematic. I'm saying that I thought I was going to get a team up, and I'd get these teases of a team up.
It's coming in Picard. It's definitely coming.
And so I know that, but that's what I was like, oh, this is good, but wait till we get his crew, his new crew, and then I'll be really excited.
Okay. I agree with most everything you're saying. I'm okay with it not being space-bound yet.
Yeah.
I'm good with that. But I'm super happy from the opening moments.
Yeah.
This was great. This felt like it was a very assured premiere. It also felt like a preamble,
Yes.
Definitely a preamble to what we're going to get. We didn't even get to meet all the characters that are going to be on this show, which is fine. It's appropriate. But it was really well done. It gave me more than enough time to... It gave me more than enough to keep me interested and looking forward to the next episode. I thought this offered just the right amount of callbacks and nostalgia without giving us that lowest common denominator type of nostalgia.
Yeah.
There were some callbacks, but there weren't so many. All the callbacks seemed to really service the new story that they're going to tell, which was great. It wasn't just like, oh, remember Geordi? There's Geordi. But... I think that tells us that the showrunners know and they get the appeal of the original or of the 90s Star Trek, and they kind of get what works. And they're working that. They're working what worked back then, the themes that worked back then. You know, Data's, not only his sacrifice, but Data's quest for humanity seems like it's going to be a big theme running here, obviously. And the tone was good and balanced. It's not super dark. It wasn't super campy either. It's kind of in the middle, you know? It's kind of edging on prestige as well, I thought.
I got to agree with you, Mike. There were some throwbacks, but more than that, they did service the story. But what I really liked was, I don't want to call them Easter eggs, but for those who are deep into the Star Trek lore, there was a lot of history that they built upon, right? That they didn't go out and explain, but I feel like they're going to uncover. So it wasn't too much. It was just the right balance of saying, hey, we're going to talk about names that you've heard before. And episodes, and there's, you know, when they pull open the box, you know, the drawer, and you're seeing B4.
It's not Data, it's B4.
It's not Data, it's not Lore, it's B4. Like, there's these moments that go back to the...
confused now.
I know he is.
His name is B4?
Data? Okay, there's three versions of Data, kind of. He has two brothers. The first one was...
Is there also a Mirrorverse one?
Probably,
yeah.
The first one was almost a prototype called B4. Then there was Data, and his twin brother is Lore. Is that okay? Is that all right?
I mean, wait till we can start talking about Data's daughter, but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
But yes, but there were these moments where it was like, oh, this is a story that I loved. This is a story that I knew, and it's like a deep cut. Yeah.
Yeah, there were themes of what it means to be human, what is artificial, synthetic, social commentary going on, like all of Star Trek, which is great. Very pointed social commentary, talking about the way the Federation is tipping into othering certain people. And I count synthetics or androids as people because from the perspective of Picard, we know he sees them as people. And that's where my perspective is.
They also seem to be hating on Romulans.
Yes, oh, yeah. Very much. Grant, what's your hot take?
I don't know. I'm a little bit of a mixed bag. I feel like I need to be sold on this world and this story a little bit more.
You probably have a lot of questions because, as people might not know, Grant doesn't know a lot about Star Trek. You've seen the Abrams movies, you've seen Discovery, and that's about it.
Yep, I would say that's pretty accurate. So I'm kind of unfamiliar with a lot of this. I do have questions for you guys on certain aspects of this story and if some of this is new to you guys as well, or if you already have some back history that I'm unfamiliar with. But ultimately, I think I just kind of landed on, like, there's a lot of setup going on here. It was a little slow. It felt more like a detective mystery than it kind of felt like a Star Trek adventure romp that I was expecting. And
it's working up to it.
I know, but it, like, right now it's like it's an old man begrudgingly being pulled into a mystery, and this isn't... Television is an hour each episode, and I expect within an hour they can achieve what a movie achieves in an hour of an hour and a half a movie. And you can get a lot done with quicker pacing and, like, just cutting away a lot of the fat. But I think they were basking a lot in some nostalgia that might appeal to you guys but didn't really hit for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little bit weird where I was like, all right, come on, let's get to some other things happening.
That's a good point, but the nostalgia could have been a lot worse, I think. I don't think it really treaded into the worst aspects of nostalgia. I think what they were doing, and especially since he is Picard to me, but Patrick Stewart is a producer, they were paying reverence to the character of Picard. But for me, they didn't really overdo it.
I didn't think they overdid it, but I also love the fact that Grant said it felt like a detective mystery, right? Yeah.
This is a different thing.
It is, but for Grant, who is the newbie and doesn't understand that Picard often goes into the holodeck as Dix and plays a private detective, that's appropriate, right?
You hear that? He goes into the holodeck as Dix.
I did hear as Dix, mm-hmm. and my 13-year-old brain totally went right to your slash fic.
D-I-X, Dixon. So I think that feeling, gives credence and gives credibility to Picard and what we're seeing, because this is different. I mean, we'll get a team up, there'll be an ensemble, but this is a show that is specifically about one character. So I think we're going to see a lot more of the kind of the subtle themes that help us understand who he is.
What'd you think about the pacing? Grant had a little bit of issues with the pacing being a newcomer to the Picard story.
So I thought it was a little slower than I expected.
Really?
Just a tad. But I thought what happened was they did a really good job of breaking it up and giving us an action scene, a fight scene here.
I like the action a lot. I don't think it was overdone. It was really well orchestrated.
It was not overdone. It was underused. That's my problem.
It was used sparingly, for sure.
It's a very different tone than Discovery, right? It's a very different tone.
Discovery is so fast-paced, especially season two.
Yeah. And so to me, when we opened up, I was thinking, wow, to own a vineyard seems really boring, right? Like it was like walking kind of through the vineyard shots.
But that's the thing. We got to get him out of the vineyard. And by the end of the episode, he's ready to get out of there and get back into space. And, you know, that theme of getting back to what he's good at, you know, he even talks about it at the end. He's been laying fallow for so many years.
Waiting to die,
And waiting to die. And finally somebody or something pulls him out of that funk.
I mean, this is like old man Logan. It's kind of like Logan the movie where he was
also co-starring Patrick Picard. Right. Yeah. Patrick Picard.
Any of these kind of old men who just get pulled back in for one last jaunt.
It's not begrudging, you know? This is what I love about Picard. He is ready to back a cause that he believes in and is for the greater good at all times. So one of the big characteristics is that he wants what's best for all, not just humanity, but for the universe. And he can play a part in that, no matter how old he is, he's going to play a part in that. And that's what really came across in this episode.
I will certainly defer to your expertise on knowledge of Picard, but I thought what they were establishing in this episode itself was that he had sort of relinquished that role. He had gone into hiding. He hung up his hat and was no longer down for fighting the good fight, even against the Federation. He saw the Federation losing their way and their cause, right?
Starfleet.
Yeah. Is that not the same thing?
Starfleet is sort of the Navy or the military branch of the Federation.
Got it.
Or NASA.
Okay. So anyway, he seemed to hang up his hat because he got a little bit jaded by whatever their motives had shifted to, or maybe they weren't championing the causes he continued to believe in, which feels in a way to me that he did like give up for a bit. And this is the thing that motivated him to get back into it.
I can see where you're coming from because it does. I can see where you would think maybe he gave up and left Starfleet. But to me, that felt more like an action that he was motivated to do, not just leaving Starfleet, but as a protest.
Yes.
You know, right.
It was a protest. It was something I can do, not something I can walk away from.
Yeah. And I think what we're talking about is it's not just like some captain, right, who gave up. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about is probably at the time the most iconic figure in all of Starfleet, right?
So leaving was an action that he took. It wasn't it wasn't really a falling back at that point.
No. It was an act of protest.
Yes, exactly. He was saying, I have for so long embodied what Starfleet has been about, and this is not that Starfleet. So to show you that I, the most decorated, significant figure at the moment, am saying, This isn't what Starfleet is supposed to be. I'm walking away. And that was a huge protest, right? It would be akin to the president going, I don't know where we're going, so I quit.
Oh, man, can you – we can dream. but in all seriousness, I think that it's one thing to step down in protest, but keep fighting the fight from the sidelines, you know? Don't step away – Obama, and then just, you know, go into like not saying anything anymore. Like, keep speaking out about the shitty, hypothetically, the shitty current president.
And, but then we won't have a story where he gets back up.
Right.
I just think one of my favorite parts was when, like you said, he basically admitted to being a bit of a whiny bitch for years. And he's like, I'm getting back into the fight. I'm gonna do things. I'm going to take an active role here.
Right. Clyde, I thought all the exposition was really good for orienting us in Picard's life now.
Yes.
For the most part, why he left Starfleet. Can you kind of recap for us why he left Starfleet? Like, was that clear to you?
Yes. So let me first say, you know, Mike, you know I love pilots, right? So this is effectively a pilot. So I think when you have a pilot, that exposition is really important because you're orienting everyone, even those of us who think we know the story. Mm-hmm. You're reorienting us to what happened. I mean, it's been a long time. And then for people who are new, like Grant, you're trying to give them some sense of grounding to the characters and what's going on. So what happened in this particular, I guess, storyline, and I love the way they did by using the interview, right, to tell us bits and pieces of it.
Yeah, the exposition here was done really well.
Right.
It wasn't just like a black screen with a yellow crawl.
Nor was it Sorkin-esque where you have this monologue in the middle of a kind of a walk and talk.
Yeah.
But here what we learn is that about a year ago, so a year previously.
So he's only been out for a year or so.
That's what it sounds like because it was the anniversary.
Okay.
Right? It was the anniversary of this.
But it could have been continual.
But it could have been, yeah.
I got the sense it was like decades.
I thought it was 14 years.
I got the sense it was a decade or more.
Okay.
But they were celebrating the anniversary of the supernova that destroyed Romulus.
Right. So you had – so there was a supernova that was coming to destroy Romulus, the Romulan homeworld.
And are you – was this part of the show?
Yes.
Like, are you guys familiar with this?
Yes. Actually, this happened in the 2009 Star Trek movie.
Which one was that?
The original one. The first one that J.J. Abrams directed.
Oh.
Yeah. That movie started out in the prime timeline where The Next Generation
– I thought that was Vulcan.
Vulcan did explode in that movie. But the movie starts out with a supernova destroying Romulus. In the prime timeline where TNG took place.
Okay.
And also where Discovery takes place. And that's what caused the rift in space-time that allowed Spock, Prime Spock, Leonard Nimoy, to go back in time and into an alternate universe where we see Chris Pine as Kirk and all that.
He's just so dreamy.
Okay, so.
Give me that Chris Pine.
There you go.
Oh, his head is massive. Look at that guy.
All right, so kind of explaining what happened, and I feel like I'm talking to Grant mostly, but what we see is we see the supernovas going to destroy Romulus.
Mm-hmm.
And so Picard rallies the Federation who doesn't want to help because at the time the Romulans are an enemy.
I don't think there's ever been a time in Trek lore that we've seen on screen in which the Romulans are not a threat. It's true, an enemy.
Right.
Like the Klingons became our friends.
Friends, but Romulans never.
Romulans never, yeah. So they were, if they weren't actively threatening the Federation, they were spying and working from the shadows.
Right,
to bring
waiting for their opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about our biggest enemy, Picard, you know, rallies everyone. He uses all of his influence to really say, we need to help save 900 million enemies, right? Help to evacuate them.
I love when she says, you saved, you know, however many million Romulan lives. And he's like, no, just lives.
Just lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but while this is going on, there was a rogue synthetic attack. So they use this to attack the utopian shipyards
on Mars.
Yes. Yeah. So, and this is a
significant. Like 90,000 died.
Yeah, and so this is pretty significant. So this is a shipyard. This is a major shipyard. So if you want to think about this, this is where Enterprise was built. I think Voyager was constructed there. Cisco actually worked there. I know you're a big Cisco fan. Mm-hmm. Defiant was designed there. This is kind of an iconic moment or an iconic place, and it was destroyed in the synth attack.
And it still burns to this day.
Well, yeah. So, and it's, you've got.
Why is that?
Not enough fire extinguishers.
I mean, yeah. Well, they torched the atmosphere. So that's what it was. So they lit the atmosphere and that's why it burned. So when you look at this, this became this huge issue, right? And I was thinking, well, they were trying to save $900 million and, you know, 90,000 died. But that was the catalyst for what happened. And at that point, they decided a ban on all synthetics. Right. So this, the reason why this is important to Picard is because this includes Data, right? And the research around Data, and they were researching and creating synthetic lives.
Well, a big thing here is that Picard always saw Data as a person, as a human, and we see that in the opening scene where he's dreaming about Data, and that was really smart to open with that scene because it opens with Irving Berlin's Blue Skies. Which Data sang. But that's what's interesting about that is I don't think even a lot of Trek fans will remember that because that happened in one of the worst Trek movies. And at the beginning of it, it was kind of a throwaway scene where Data gets up during Riker's wedding and sings Blue Skies. It was maybe a bit of fan service, but...
Wasn't that on a boat? Like a holographic boat.
That was
terrible.
That was another movie. But anyway, I love that. And during that scene, the show's reminding us that Picard sees Data as an equal, as a person, not as a thing. Even when he's living in this society that is really othering androids and is afraid of them.
Which I think is pretty fascinating because the character that we don't see that we hear a lot of is this Commander Bruce Maddox.
Maddox, you know who that is?
Yeah, so Maddox, I know, Grant, we're trying to clean.
Everything is a thing?
Everything is a thing. Everything's a thing.
This might be a tough one for you to get through, man.
So, okay, so if you remember when he's at he's at the Daystrom Institute, and he's got, was it Agnes Girardi, played by Alison Pill?
I love Alison Pill.
Yes.
Right.
I'm going to say that one thing that I can neutrally say without having like a wealth of information about the Star Trek universe.
Well, she is the niece's daughter of, I'm just kidding.
Is it really?
No. So she mentions that she was hired, brought on by Maddox, right? So Maddox is a character in Star Trek who actually refused for a very long time to believe that Data was more than property and wanted to actually deconstruct and then reconstruct Data, his positronic brain to understand and then duplicate him. So he wasn't a fan of Data. So the fact
became a fan of Data.
So
after
it's basically Age of Ultron, Marvel movie where they're taking Vision apart the cube apart to understand Vision.
Kind of, yeah.
Sort of. Same thing. I'm on board.
They wanted to, but they did not.
Yes, pretty much. That Data is the most advanced cybernetic person ever created, but we don't know how because his creator died.
Ah.
You know? And
he infused him with heart. That's the difference.
With love.
Heart. Love. The secret ingredient.
What are those crystals? What are those crystals on the Discovery?
Dilithium.
Time crystals.
Time crystals.
Magic time crystals.
Magic time crystals.
Okay. What was your favorite scene?
I think for me, it was that realization, and it was early on, but when I realized that Dodge was basically Data's daughter.
Yeah.
It was something about that was a hard line connection to TNG. Mm-hmm. Even though I know I'm looking at Patrick Stewart, that was like, wow, this is an extension. I can't wait to know more. And then they killed her, which I was like, why?
But there are two.
There are two. That was helpful. Yeah.
Okay.
Grant?
My favorite scene. I do like the action sequences. I think when she's still in denial that she might be a synthetic, an android, and then they have the fight at the staircase outside in San Fran, and she just leaps like a Jedi, like all the way across the stairs to like start whooping their ass. I mean, it felt, a lot of this felt very much like Firefly. What's her name? River?
Yeah.
From Firefly. Like she's this kind of perfect soldier kind of creation thing. And and then there was this reference, like when those guys break in at the very beginning, mm-hmm. they the
Are those Romulans?
They're Romulans, mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the difference between a Romulan and a Vulcan?
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, this is going to come up.
They're from different planets, for one.
But they both have the silly eyebrows.
They are related.
They are.
And they used to live together, but they're different races. Basically, the bottom line is that Vulcans reject... Well, Vulcans are logic-based and reject emotion or try to suppress it. Romulans are hot-blooded.
Hot-headed.
Mm-hmm. Hot-headed, okay. Hot-blooded.
Hot-blooded.
So like Klingons.
They used to look different. Back in TNG, the Romulans looked like Vulcans, but they had a lot of forehead ridges.
Okay.
It looks like they're not doing that. So basically every pointy ear that you see in Picard in this episode is a Romulan.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Sure. We didn't see any Vulcans.
So
no Vulcans.
The pointy-eared people that are helping him at his chateau, those are Romulans to save, presumably?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I really like that they established that right before the interview where he walks off because, you know, the interviewer is a vain person. It's his two Romulan housemates who tell him, be the captain that they remember. You know,
like they have a love and a reverence for him.
Exactly. And that's telling us that even though we've seen Romulans as villains for decades in Star Trek, they're individuals.
That's like the whole thing this show's constantly trying to get across, or at least, you know, my familiarity with Discovery as well.
Right.
It's like you want to paint everyone who's other with a broad brush and assume that they're the enemy. And people are complex.
Right.
Yeah. Individuals or lives are complex. But there's a part where those Romulans are attacking Daj and they capture her and then essentially say, where are the others? Like, it doesn't seem to me that she's linked only to her sister Soji.
Did they say other or others?
Others.
Multiple.
They said multiple.
Yeah.
Which makes me think, okay, there's multiple synthetics that she's attached to in some sort of like Sense8 kind of.
Right.
Remember that show from Netflix where like all these people's minds were connected and they get Skillshare?
Yeah.
So I think like all these other ones are skill sharing with her where all of a sudden she's able to fight a bunch of people.
What
and she's also
you?
Able to like hack a bunch of stuff.
What does that remind you of, Clyde?
I don't know.
The what? Borg.
Yes.
The Borg had a single consciousness.
The hive mind.
And they were partly synthetic.
I don't think that they're skill sharing. I think that they are an incredibly evolved version of where Data was, right?
But she describes it as lightning trying to hit the ground when suddenly she's fighting, but it's kind of outside of her control. It's like suddenly she had an ability to do this, but it's like unfamiliar to her brain.
Like perhaps somebody who's connected to her knew she needed to be activated at that point and downloaded what she needed at that point.
I know Kung Fu. I actually...
right?
So like some kind of matrix?
Yes. I'm going to say that I think that... It was more of a latent computer program. Like it was there.
Yeah.
But until that moment, it wasn't turned on.
Right.
Almost like Data's emotion chip, right?
What did you guys think about Daj? I thought that she felt very human when we were introduced to her and her boyfriend. I really liked them together. I was like, I instantly like and care about these people. It didn't feel CW-y to me to use a catchphrase.
So not only do I agree with you, and I did like it, and it did feel like wow, and it was very. It started us off very TNG, where you've got this couple and they're talking about their career and how they're going to grow and learn, and it was very Wesley Crusher-esque, right? Mm. And then it quickly turned to something a little bit darker. And more Discovery.
To a Bourne movie.
Right? But so,
right.
So here's the thing that's interesting, because I do think that we're getting, this is more Discovery than it is TNG for two reasons. One, her boyfriend was Zahian, right? The only other Zahian that we know is Poe.
Right.
Right? From Discovery.
That's what he was.
He was Zahian. And the other thing is, and I started to realize this, is when we look at TNG and TOS and Voyager, maybe a little less DS9, but for all the other, and you know, we don't talk about Enterprise on the show, but
we can.
What we're used to is something that's very episodic. This is not that. This wasn't a open and close in an episode. It's not a two-parter. This is much like Discovery. We're starting a journey, and it's going to uncover as we go.
It's building.
Yeah. And so I think that I really enjoyed it, but I did feel like we were getting kind of the best of both worlds.
I thought it was interesting in the beginning sequence that her boyfriend is the first to die. He's the first, I want to say it was the first black character we see on the show. And there's a trope.
Yeah.
The black guy dies first trope.
Yeah.
Which very much
it's never good.
Echoed the barrier gaze issue that I think we were discussing in season one of Discovery when Culber gets killed early on.
Right.
And I just thought, once again, that trope seems to like live on.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, I'm interested in like, what is this guy's character? What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Dead. Guess I'm not going to find out.
Right. But to counter that, I see what you're saying, but the death, I felt the death, even though I knew this character for 2 minutes. I still cared about him dying, you know?
Yeah, they seemed like genuine, down-to-earth people that are innocent, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and I would say that I think if there's one reason for me to overlook that trope is the history and track record that Star Trek has, right? Like, this is something very different. I mean, you're talking about a franchise that has, you know, their first foray back into television was to put a black woman at front and center of their show, right? So this is one of those things where it's like, okay, did I appreciate it? Not necessarily, but your track record is such that I'm going to largely ignore it.
Right. No, I think more it echoed a little bit of that discussion we had previously of like, oh, those can be some tricky narrative areas to navigate and like have a little bit of an awareness about.
Right.
And the fact that he did that is like, okay.
I want to add, kind of looking at the chat, Just Fiat said that they didn't look at him as black brown, but really more as Zahian.
Zahian, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was real. They just looked at him as an obstacle to get out of the way.
Right.
That's all that was.
And I think that set an early tone to let us know. Because if you think about it, in all the other episodes, every time someone died, it was pretty meaningful, right? They didn't just, like, even, you know, we joke about red shirts, right? And the original series and how, you know, they got swallowed up. But for the most part, people with actual lines, people who we are invested in, even for a moment, they didn't die early, and it usually was significant. However, we're introduced that the tone of this show is going to be different in that, you know, this warm and interesting character immediately is kind of just cast aside.
What did you guys think when Daj died? Because up to that point, we're seeing her slowly develop a relationship with Picard. And right before that point, you said that whole sequence was one of your favorite things about the episode. What I loved right before the action was Picard telling her, you're my family. You're home. The reason you're with me is because Data was my family. You're his daughter. Now you're my family. I thought that was really poignant. And I really loved the way that she was talking about her memories. And obviously Picard has the opinion that these are potentially false memories that were implanted in her.
At least initially. I mean, he has every right when a crazy person shows up to his house and says, I have visions of you. He'd be like, hold up, drink some tea.
Right.
Let's talk this over. Maybe it's just visions.
But, you know, this was after he basically confirmed with the painting.
Right.
With Data's painting. And so he's trying to let her know, well, that memory you have of your father, who I think created a new flower and named it after her.
An orchid,
right. That's a beautiful memory, and no one can take that away from you. He shows reverence and respect for that, even though it might not be real. And then he respectfully and with love goes on to tell her, more about her origins. And right. That is so Picard. It wasn't, there was just so much compassion
it was
in that moment.
It wasn't overbearing. It wasn't like, look, you're absolutely wrong, and I'm going to explain to you.
Like, she was seen very much by him and her, and it was, this girl is discovering who she really is and not necessarily liking it, but he's taking her through the steps with such a gentle hand. And that's one thing I love about Picard. He typically knows where to go. And if he can lead you with love and compassion, that's what he's going to do. And that's what we saw in that scene.
Beautiful. Eloquently put, Mike.
Uh-oh.
My issue is he bases all of this off of going and looking at a painting. Like, there's no other evidence that he's really built up before, mind-fucking someone with, hey, you might be an android, and everything that you've ever believed is bullshit. That's a pretty heavy thing to lay on someone when all you did was look at a painting, right? Isn't that weird?
Good point. Fair point.
Like, also, take some DNA or
also, she was able to, like, track his iPhone.
Well,
you found me?
Well, I think there was something that she said that I think really resonated, and that was, like, I know you, and you know me, right?
And he said back to her, yes, I know you know me.
Yeah, and I think...
And you know me and I know you.
And you know I know you.
And you and me and everybody we know.
Well, I think part of that comes to the fact that, Data downloaded his memory, right? But when Lal died, he also downloaded hers. So if you're talking about a positronic brain, even a fraction, I think they're starting to realize, wow, that's why, it's not an accident. It's like, oh, yeah, someone's told me about you. It is, I have a memory that I can't quite access that involves you, right? And so I think that was this connection that they had.
He has a lot of experience with androids.
He does.
And not just what we saw in TNG with Data, but apparently after that, they created tons of androids.
Yes. Well, yeah, a whole, a classroom of them. To answer your question, Mike, I was upset. Like, I was disappointed.
That she died.
I was very disappointed that she died.
So you liked the character?
I did, and I thought that it was...
And the performance?
I thought she did a good job, a good enough job that I wasn't distracted by the acting.
Yeah.
I looked at it and said, we're getting to know her. I like this relationship. And I was already starting to see this picture of the young Data bringing the old Kaji Picard out of retirement and being like his new protege, his new number one. And then they killed her. And it's like, yeah, there's another one, but that other one is basically a Romulan.
Mm. Are we sure she's dead? We saw some people vaporizing right before, they specifically showed that Romulan fall and then vaporize before he hit the ground.
Yeah, that's true.
And I was like, it's possible.
But she blew up.
Also, did he spit acid at her?
Is this corrosive, explosive
from Mortal Kombat?
That was one of the questions I had. Like, I don't remember Romulan blood being akin to xenomorph blood from Alien.
Right.
Because it looked like he just spat blood at her because they bleed green.
Yeah.
But I put the question out to our patrons on Slack, our Tribbles, and they were like, no, I think he had some kind of, super spy chemical agent that he, was trying to burn her with. Why it came out of his mouth, I don't know.
Okay, so going back to her origins, it's we're presuming right now that Data is her father, given that he made a painting called Daughter, and
it's her,
and it's
there are two paintings. One of them clearly shows her face, which is the one in the archive.
Yeah,
and the one Picard has the face a little obscured.
And he's supposed to finish that painting metaphor with going and finding Soji, whatever.
Soji, yeah.
So Data potentially created her, right? Uh-huh. Well, they say something.
Not really.
Not so much created her, but she comes from him.
She's derived from his knowledge base or his programming.
Exactly.
Like that, yeah.
They say that her father named her, she says, after an orchid that was Daj Incidium, which is like some splicing of a pink and a yellow orchid, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Yellow, Data. Mm-hmm. It's got yellow eyes, yellowish skin, yellow outfit, maybe. I don't know what color he wears. But he could be the yellow of this spliced orchid thing. What would pink be? Is my question to you guys. Is there a pink Power Ranger of the Star Trek universe that you guys associate?
No, I was thinking about this a little bit.
Troy sometimes wore like a purpley pink outfit.
He did, but he was
cheated. Troy.
Oh, Troy, yes. Well, we're not, the last thing we need to do on this podcast is start talking about Troy's outfits.
Word.
I'm not thinking it's like, it's got to be like a mother and a father kind of thing. I'm like saying like they might have, is there some other android or something that they might have also used some essence of, or yeah. Borg.
Right.
Is 7 of 9 pink-esque in quality?
She's very blue.
Yeah.
I just thought pink was, yeah, or gray. I just thought pink was kind of symbolizing person. Like flesh.
Okay.
Right? So you've got this yellow, which is android, and this pink, which is flesh. And that's why it was pink. It was the because this is the first time we've seen an android that is actually biological. Right?
Right. That passes.
That passes. That
Data
passes.
Data was the most advanced android we'd ever seen on Star Trek, but he didn't pass for human. Even though when he went back in time and everybody was like, what the fuck? He was like, I'm French. And they're like, okay.
Right.
I had another question. I wanted to talk about Picard's dreams.
Yeah.
And just kind of delving into, he's got two specific dream sequences. And for a second there, during that battle, I thought that was a third dream sequence because I was like, oh, did they really kill her?
I was hoping it was a dream sequence.
Like, maybe this is a dream.
When he woke up, I was like, yes, she's alive.
And were you bummed by the death, or were you not really invested in the character?
I was a little bit bummed, I guess. I was kind of interested in him taking her under his wing and it being a journey of discovery for both of them in her past. But now,
nicely done.
I guess he has... Once he talked to Allison Pill, he's got a new mission, and he'll drag her along for it. And I guess the actress still gets to kind of do something as a twin, so sure. But you know, he has those two dreams. The first one being when he's playing chess, I think. Oh no, mm-hmm. playing poker against Data in the beginning, mm-hmm. and the second one when Data is doing the painting. And both of them seem to be like indicating to him that he has something that he hasn't fully addressed in his life. In the poker playing at the beginning, he's talking to Data about like tells, and he's, which maybe this is going to be some smoking or what do you call it?
Chekhov's gun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Chekhov. Anyway, it's going to be like the whole like he can have a tell when he dilates his pupils. What if we see Data later and he's dilating his pupils to tell him something?
Mm-hmm.
He can't say directly.
Right.
I think that's what that is. But anyway, he talks about, I don't want the game to end, which is when he's taking so slow.
Great quote.
And then eventually says, I'm all in.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything explodes.
Right.
So he's like, he doesn't want his life to end, right? But he wants to once again reinvest in what he was passionate about. He's all in. I get how that one works. The other dream is when he's doing the painting, and what was it that he said?
You finish it, or something like that.
Oh, yeah. He's talking about, like, you should be able to, I wrote it down here. Another dream of the painting. It says, finish it. I don't know how. And then he's like, that's not true.
That's not true, Captain.
Yeah, so once again, it's this idea that he has unfinished business. And he's the one who has the true vision, I guess, for how to see things through to the end. And in a way, it's sort of, this is his swan song, right?
Like Data?
Picard. Like,
oh, yes.
This is his last journey before mm-hmm. Picard and Patrick Stewart die.
And I like that they're linking his... Oh, that's sad.
It is sad.
I like that they're linking his Picard's, if this is his swan song, which obviously it will be, to his relationship with Data. Because Data was, I think Picard was connected emotionally to Data more than any other character on The Next Generation and in the films. And Data was there and probably the most important presence at all, if not all of the points when Picard needed a savior. Data was put the board... Yeah. Data put the Borg to sleep and was able to cut off Picard's connection to the hive mind when Picard was assimilated, which saved him
mm-hmm.
In Best of Both Worlds, Part 1 and 2. Data, and First Contact, my favorite Star Trek movie. I love Wrath of Khan, but Come on, first contact's great.
Wrath of Khan.
At the end of that movie, after Picard saves everybody, he still has one person to save, and he's going to risk it all for that one person. He goes to save Data. And at the end of Nemesis, the last TNG movie, Data sacrifices himself for Picard. So that bond is clear, and it's so smart for these showrunners to make this story about, if it is Picard's swan song, about Picard fulfilling not only his destiny, but Data's destiny as well. Because Data was always trying to be accepted as a person and become more human. And now there's a part of him that can potentially live on and do that. But it's happening in a world, in a climate that is very afraid and angry at synthetics.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, Mike, because, you know, what is every parent's hope, right? Is that your children will achieve the things that you couldn't in your lifetime, that they will go further, that they'll be
right.
more accepted, that they'll have that legacy. And so Picard has this possibility to help Data, even after his death, achieve that thing that he wanted more than anything else through his, we'll say, descendants, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I think that was this pull that had him so passionate and ready to get back in the game and help Dodge, and then ultimately devastated him when she was destroyed, and now is saying, I have to rectify this.
And what did you guys think about the twin aspect? I was like, why are there twins? But we do know that the twin duality has been pretty strong the in Star Trek as of late, you know, the battle at the binary stars in Discovery. And of course, in TNG, we had Data and Lore. We had two. So do you guys, Lore was the evil twin.
Of course.
He was.
Who was not from the Mirror Universe.
No.
So do you think that Soji, is that her name? The other, mm-hmm. the other Data daughter, she evil?
I don't think she's evil. Mm-hmm. I think she's just different. I think she has a different upbringing. What's fascinating to me is that
they knew each other though, right?
See,
they were twin sisters.
I'm not convinced.
Doesn't Soji mention my twin sister?
She says her twin sister. She says her sister. We're twins. I'm not so sure at this point that she's talking about Dodge.
Okay.
And we don't know that twin means identical in the way she's saying it.
Yeah.
So I'm leaning toward this because I didn't get a sense that Dodge knew anything about having a sister.
Right.
But she did have some faker who was playing a mom role.
That was weird.
Before jiggling out of view, Max Headroom style.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was, but
I almost thought maybe that was fake in her head. I don't know.
I thought maybe it was just some type of visual effect on the phone or something like that, but that wasn't an actor.
Maybe just an actor.
I think it's more of the other actors that are all linked to her, mm-hmm. Borg style, I'm guessing. I don't know if I'm using this correctly.
Yeah.
That are able to program a fictional version of a mother figure in order to talk to her, in order to get her to kind of do what they want, because they're all protective of what they are. And in a way, Dodge might be one of the outliers in this experiment, her and Soji, mm-hmm. who don't have the awareness of what they are.
Right.
So they're existing in this world to see if synthetics can pass as human and not know about themselves and just operate in a way that they just pass.
Right.
This is like the next stage of Google automated driving cars, right?
Yeah.
Like you just put them in the wild and see if they can operate without.
She also wore
looking.
Google Glass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of Google here.
So I've got to ask, you know, when we were doing Discovery Pod focused on Discovery, we kept running into this question of, is it the Borg? Is it the Borg? Is it the Borg? Is this the, are we seeing some
control.
Type of control? Yeah, control. Are we looking at some, you know,
Proto-Borg,
you know, an early version of Borg. Well, here we are, episode 1. And we have a Borg cube, like right off the bat. It's a wrecked Borg cube.
Yeah.
It was
the Romulan reclamation site.
Yes.
So they're trying to make
their home world.
A new home world, a synthetic home world for the Romulans.
Yeah, inside a board
inside.
Cube.
Was that a reclaimed board cube, or are they making it look like a board cube, or is this in hiding where some a sect of Romulans is secretly working with Borg technology? That there's a lot of questions there.
What I've seen so far is that this was a wrecked Borg cube that was reclaimed by the Romulans. At least that's what they're saying right now.
Are the Borg gone, theoretically?
They can always come back.
Yeah. So, but here we are, like episode one.
Yeah.
And we've got some element of Borg.
Yeah.
We're talking about synthetic androids.
Yeah.
Right. So the minute that you have an android inside a Borg cube, you're walking a fine line before you're introducing Borg.
Yes.
How do you feel about that, Mike? Are you happy that the Borg are back?
I like the Borg. I think they're fun. I think they got a little played out, like on Voyager.
Yes.
At the final seasons of Voyager. But the reason I like the Borg and the idea of them showing up on this series is because Picard's emotional connection to the Borg is so potent, as we saw in First Contact.
I mean, he is...
He was assimilated by them. He was essentially raped by them.
He still has PTSD over the Borg.
Right. And that's the thing that just makes him crazy. You put him near the Borg, and he fucking goes nuts. Yeah.
So Soji is on this Romulan reclamation site, Borg cube, whatever is going on here. Mm-hmm. And she is she supposed to be a Romulan?
No, she's a therapist.
Yeah. And this dude, Narik.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm getting that name right, but is he a...
He's a Romulan.
Is he Romulan?
He's a Romulan.
He's a Romulan who just like... saddles up to her, starts hitting on her, and starts unloading some baggage right away.
He's a bad guy. I mean, one of the things that I appreciate...
He looks like evil Spock he looks like the dude who just played Spock.
He gave
he looks a bit like Ethan Peck.
Yeah, I got Game of Thrones vibes the entire time.
Yeah. It was interesting because when they first introduced him, he's doing the villain walk with the villain music and the long villain coat.
And look. Like.
Yeah, but then when he starts talking, you get kind of a Freddie Highmore vibe about him. Where he's kind of approachable and non-threatening.
Freddie Highmore. That's a good reference. Yeah.
Nice reference.
Yeah. But I also referenced Freddie Highmore because he played Norman Bates for like 4 years on Bates Motel. And the whole thing about him was that he always seemed non-threatening, but under the surface, there was a killer there.
Yeah.
And that's the exact same vibe I got from this guy. And I like that. I like that he's just not this scenery-chewing villain that we get.
Well, one of the things that I appreciate about Star Trek is we have clear good guys and bad guys. And I feel like television has moved to a place where, you know, everybody is Walter White, where it's this shade of gray, right? Like, you're kind of bad, but we want to love you and we want to kind of see how human you are.
Lorca.
I think some of us called Lorca being a bad guy from the beginning.
I just want to say I want Lorca back.
I know you do. But I think so. It's obvious to me that in Star Trek, we get back to having some clear heroes and villains.
Mm-hmm.
And from the minute that Narek showed up, I was like, I was looking for him. That's the villain.
He's a bad guy.
That's the bad guy.
He's a bad guy. What'd you think about his performance? And do you think he's going to be a compelling villain going forward, Grant?
I think he's a fantastic evil wizard in the world of Harry Potter or Fantastic Beasts. That's what I thought when I saw this guy. I'm like,
you like those Fantastic Beasts movies?
Oh, just go ahead,
long
and like,
coat.
Yeah, just pull on your goatee and give that mischievous eye. And I know you got a wizard wand in there.
I don't think he was that, you know, corny or stock as a villain. I thought there was some complexity there.
No, I agree. Okay. I guess, but behind the scenes, I'm like, I know you're going to be the villain.
Yeah,
I have my hackles up.
Well, I mean, the show clearly stated. In the first shot of this guy, he's a villain. So I don't think that's in question.
I'll see how compelling he is.
Yeah.
You know what he's not right now?
Mm.
He's not Vok, right? He's not this character who you go, wow, this is an uber villain. I haven't seen that yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm guessing he is an uber villain, but we'll see.
I have a few more thoughts.
Yeah.
One, I want to talk about Patrick Stewart / Picard's his dress, his outfits.
The costuming on this show is really good.
He's
and that has not been the legacy. Stylish. That has not been the legacy of Star Trek.
You I'll don't like you the pull-down sweaters? You
well,
like
I mean, the uniforms are fine, but, like, any type of leisure wear you see, especially in 90s Star Trek, like deep Vs with shiny fabric.
You talked about...
Wait, you're telling me you literally had a problem with the deep V?
I didn't have a problem with it. I enjoyed it. I just don't think it'll work today.
It would definitely not work today.
But his sweater game was pretty strong.
Yeah. Our friend, my friend Joanna Robinson, who writes, who's covering Picard for Vanity Fair, tweeted about the costumer, and I think she's going to interview the costumer too on this show. And she's done a bunch of other great shows too. But
get her to kick her over to here too.
Yeah, I think that'd be good. But go on.
There's this one scene though in particular where they show him wearing a red sweater and he's got a little gold pin, and I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I didn't watch TNG, but that's pretty iconic look there for Patrick Stewart for Picard, right?
Very much, very.
Oh yeah,
harken back to the uniform for sure.
I didn't see what that pin was though. I kept trying to like pause and look closer at it, and I was like, I don't know what that is.
I want to say, I think you know how we wear pins for, you know,
9/11
Remembrance Day. I think that's what it was for. Okay. The Romulan homeworld being destroyed.
Yeah, but I thought that was pretty dapper. I get that he likes his tea. But man, did they make a lot of references to him liking his tea. Is this how the original TNG was? Was he like nonstop,
really.
Earl Grey?
I mean, he was pretty consistent.
He enjoyed his tea.
Yeah, it was a regular thing.
But is he like repped by Big Earl Grey? Man, that guy's slinging for that business. I hope he's getting royalty.
There's no money in Star Trek, my friend.
And then I also want to talk about his dog.
Yeah.
Named Number One. Is that not denigrating to Riker?
Yeah.
Is that like a shit move right there?
Mm-hmm. What'd you think about that?
We named the dog Number One.
I thought what it told me was, this is a person who's lonely.
Mm.
And his now number one companion is a dog, right? Normally it was his first mate. And now he's in a situation where his first mate is his trusty dog.
What's up with this? Like, isn't a big part of Star Trek that it's like about family, about the family you find and make on this ship?
Yep.
And this dude should have had the biggest family. And yet the vision we're given of Picard 20 years in the future from when that show ended is that he's alone with two Romulan lackeys in a chateau, like, and a dog.
Well, I think
I'm like, there's something super sad about that.
Well, I think this happens all the time, though, right? So
he's in his 80s.
Well, so take the NFL for instance, right? So you've got these football players who they've been playing their whole life in a team, right? Strong camaraderie, they love it, the locker room. When they retire, one of their biggest issues is they're completely isolated. You're isolated from the game. You're isolated from your teammates. And what ultimately happens is a lot of times you start to struggle with depression. And I think what we see here is, yes, when he was in Starfleet, he had this huge family. He had a crew, right, of hundreds, right? They were very close as his senior officers in the ready room. And now that he's back in his villa and retired, kind of in this vineyard, he's lonely. They're all out doing stuff, right? If you read the books, you know they're out doing stuff.
I just want a couple scenes of like some of these people of the past, like dropping by to visit. Like
he'll be back,
He's got like little birthday cards and shit on the table or something. Like I want to feel the love.
Yeah,
this guy needs to. He deserves to have earned the love.
Well, Jonathan Frakes will be on the show, who plays Number One,
looking crazy. He looks like a crazy wilderness man.
So will Marina Sirtis as Troy.
And his fans would have revolted if she wasn't.
Right, because they're married. But I think the show actually addressed that issue, Grant, because during the interview at the beginning, we're told that Picard left command of the Enterprise to lead this Romulan rescue. And that became his life from then on. The Enterprise chapter closed, and for the next 20 years, he dove head first into helping the Romulans, so much so that he invited them into his home, and now they're his family. They're his best friends. So he does have that family. He does have those best friends, but...
Yeah, but they're not our family. We don't trust them.
We don't know them. They're, exactly.
They're awful Romulans. And my understanding is that Romulans
are awful.
What do you say, Clyde?
I would say, like you said earlier, not all of them.
Not all Romulans,
hashtag
Grant.
Hashtag not all Romulans?
Hashtag not all Romulans.
Hashtag. Hashtag, I like Romulans. I have a best friend who's Romulan.
What? No. Oh, it's on me. We'll get the hang of this live stream thing. Well, I know we talked a lot about this episode, and I feel like there's a lot of stuff we left on the table. We definitely maybe scratched a little more beneath the surface. I don't want to wrap up yet, but I think we might do a more in-depth pod in a few days. If we have time, we'll see. But do we want to talk about some of these comments that we got today? Or did you have more things?
Yeah, the one other thing I wanted to talk about was that intro sequence. I found it extremely underwhelming with the musical choice that's paired with it.
Are you talking about the title sequence?
Title sequence, okay. Yeah.
It was pretty reserved.
Yeah, I thought the graphics are fine, but it's pretty much a lot of the same old that I've seen in a lot of other intros. Like, the glass ceiling is breaking, but it's a shard that eventually is also a part of Picard. Like, is it a puzzle piece? Are we all pieces of the same? Are we all one? I don't know what it's trying to say necessarily. Yeah, I got a sense of that, but I don't know. I was just kind of bored by it. Like, whereas, like, I see the intro for Star Trek Discovery, and I'm like, I get so excited just hearing the music. That one's so fringe-like.
It is. And I think with Star Trek Discovery, it is energetic. And is carried out throughout the entire show in every episode. There's energy, there's action. With this, it's more, especially the first season, I think what we're seeing and the tone that intro sequence is trying to set is more of a reverential tone, more of reverence, more of respect, because we're dealing with this iconic character. But I can see where it feels kind of slow and kind of rote.
I'm going to be honest. My thought was, it's better than Enterprise.
It's been a long
I knew you were going to do that.
Getting from there to here.
This guy.
Okay, let's go ahead and jump a little bit into the comments.
All right.
Let's do it. JC says, Grant is my favorite character.
Okay.
And that's the only comment I've got. That's the only comment that matters.
Fantastic.
It's the best. Thank you. Let's see. Christopher Curry says, wondering about Data's neural net. Did the doc say that if you had one part of Data's net possible to bring the whole, it's possible to bring the whole thing back? Could we get a return of Data? The Borg may have archived something, they say.
I think we could definitely potentially get a return of Data. Allison Pill's character, who I really enjoyed, I'm glad she's on this show, basically gave us all the exposition and the answer to that question, being that Data transferred part of his positronic net and his memories into B4.
Yep.
Because Data was blown up. And he transferred all that into B4 before he was blown up. So if some of that does exist in B4, then Data could essentially father other... He can spread his seed, baby.
I look at it...
and you can potentially bring him back now because of Maddox's... is that his name? Maddox?
Maddox.
Maddox. Ben Maddox's research and Bruce Maddox and where he's come to. He's at a state where he can create...
Dr. Bruce Maddox. Say it right.
Well,
he can make new androids with just a little grain of salt of Data.
So I think that brings up an interesting point
just
because
Data.
He disappeared, right?
Yeah.
He disappeared at the attack.
He's totally captive on that Borg cube.
Well, I don't know that he's captive. This is his opportunity to do the thing that he's always wanted to do, which is build his own Data. And so I could foresee in the future we're going to get him. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I'm hoping that we get him. I've stalked the original actor's IMDb page, and it does not say Star Trek anywhere near
it. He hasn't been announced as a cast member.
And he has nothing on his IMDb page since past 2014. But for those of you who watched Discovery, you know that Star Trek is really good at throwing out fake IMDb credits.
Yavid Jokmil as Volk or whatever it was.
Okay, let me ask this. The Borg, my understanding is they're a single hive mind, right?
Yeah.
And
with a queen,
they just wanted to proliferate and dominate. And they could assimilate humans by putting a device on them and making them part of the hive mind.
Or any humanoid being.
Any humanoid. Tubules. And
but there's something a little bit blatantly obvious about wearing a big old prosthetic eye thing like Picard over there in the corner is wearing. You kind of know.
That's not Picard. That's Locutus.
That's a Borg. That's Locutus?
Yes.
He had a new identity as a Borg. Locutus of Borg.
Whatever. You know what I'm saying. Anyway, if the Borg is potentially still an active player here, and there's this possibility of synthetics existing. Hello, Locutus. Is it not possible that the Borg has now kidnapped this Bruce Maddox, Dr. Bruce Maddox,
yes,
fellow,
correct.
And they are using him to rapidly replicate a whole bunch of synthetics, disseminate them throughout the universe, but there's a switch on all of them that they can the Borg can tap into and make it them do whatever. So what we saw with Dodge is she is a Manchurian candidate of sorts, and they were just flipping a switch and making her fight her way out of a situation. Flip a switch and making her hack her way to find Picard, hop on a ship, and whatever, flew powder over there. I can only talk in Harry Potter. But
apparently.
But if that's the case, is it possible that the Borg is the big bad here and they are once again making a whole bunch of synthetics? And while Picard is advocating that synthetics should be fully accepted into society, this is one of those like Homeland sleeper cell kind of scary possibilities of...
It is possible, but I will say not all synthetics.
Yeah, and I would
hashtag
say there's
not all.
There's one little bitty flaw in your plan, and that is up until this point, the Borg have had zero chill, right? There are no subtlety whatsoever. They are kicking the front door. We're just going to take over. So the idea that they would, and they're usually too arrogant to think
they're not scheming in this way.
No, they don't think.
But it's been 20 years, and they still haven't conquered humanity. So they might,
you know, who
evolve.
Is?
We know they evolve.
The Romulan are scheming.
Yeah,
and now they're teaming up with the Romulans. Maybe
The Borg don't team up, but it's been 20 years since we've seen them, so maybe they'll team up.
We've got a question in the chat.
Mm-hmm.
Sardonyx wants to know, is Mariah joining us this season?
Yeah, Mariah will be here this season. Mariah actually had a previous engagement tonight, but she will be back. She's really sorry she missed tonight, but she actually did send us her hot take in video form, which we're going to post on all of our socials.
Hot take!
Yeah, and spoiler, she loves it, so...
She loves it?
Yeah.
Ew.
She loves
Mariah.
It.
Which is cool because, you know, Mariah and I rarely agree. So we agree this time.
Yeah, you guys are mortal enemies.
No.
Well, I mean, we've had some people checking us out. I know this is a new thing, and I hope that people continue to spread the word, let others know that this is what we're doing on here because we are liking the engagement, and if I'm way off base on some shit, feel free to call me out.
Yeah.
But don't call these other two out. They're really sensitive.
Do you have any other, like, questions we can answer? Like, specific?
Oh, you know what? Someone else had a question here that I thought was kind of interesting. Maybe you guys would know a bit more about. It was Chris Curry again. He said, do you think we will ever get ties... Do you think we will ever get ties into the episode Conspiracy, which was from season 1, episode 25? I don't know what that means. I don't know what that particular episode is, and you guys both
Conspiracy.
Are eagerly typing into the computer yourself.
I think I know what this is. Isn't this when an alien race tried to take over the leadership of Starfleet?
This isn't the original show.
Right. Oh, TNG.
Oh, this is TNG.
Yes, this is TNG.
Yep. Yeah, that's it. And that's when it was like little worm creatures that were, remember that one? Yeah.
Yes.
We'll see themes and echoes of it where I'm sure Picard is up against or bucking against the system, which happens to include admirals like it did in Conspiracy. But I don't think we're going to see little, you know, pod people thing stuff happening.
I mean, yeah, mainly a lot of my questions have been addressed. The one thing I was super curious about was whether or not you guys were familiar with this Romulan extinction event, and then the supernova, I guess, and then the Mars being attacked. But you said that's relatively new information to you guys as well.
Well, the Mars being attacked was covered in the Short Trek, which Children of Mars.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was really good, but we don't get the whole story. Basically, what happens in Children of Mars is we follow two students, young teenagers, who are fighting the whole time. And in the background, we're seeing that there's this attack happening. And the assumption is that their parents die because their parents were working at the shipyards. And we see that it was synthetics who attacked the shipyards. And that's basically all we get. But yeah, the Romulan exploding happened in a prime timeline in the 2009 Star Trek movie.
I guess that's
Romulus.
That's another question of mine. Because synthetics seem sort of like Cylons, I guess, Battlestar Galactica, right? Mm-hmm. This idea of you make these robots, they're going to come and take over and destroy you.
Terminator.
But Data is a synthetic. Did we see a huge amount of synthetics in TNG or Voyager or enough
really.
That they could form an army and destroy Mars? Like,
no, something,
so is this sort of like out of left field, a new development?
It kind of is. Something has changed because what Maddox wanted to do in TNG was take Data apart in order to create more synthetic beings.
So he was like one of the first real case studies.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen because it was argued that Data is a person with rights and you can't just take him apart like a vacuum cleaner.
And if you did that, basically what you're doing, because he represents an entire race, that what you're doing is now enslaving that race.
Right.
Oh, the ethics of it. That's interesting.
Well, that's Star Trek.
We also see there's the cyborg lady in Discovery, mm-hmm. which seems like it's a little bit of a precursor to just a straight on Data, because I don't know to what extent.
Can't be a precursor. Still, remember, they're like 10,000 years in the future now.
Yeah, but she's a cyborg and Data is 100% synthetic.
Right.
Right, but how much of, I don't know. Whatever. I guess she was pretty human.
What was her name?
No, I'm thinking the one who was like a straight up robot looking robot.
The one who passed, who died.
Yeah.
No, not her.
There's the background Arium.
Arium. We don't know about her. Well, you're not talking about Arium, though. You're talking about the one that looks like she's in Daft Punk.
Yeah. Like the Daft Punk, like straight up, like robot.
I don't know. We never got any explanation about that character, and she was only in a couple episodes.
But it did seem like functional enough, like you get a spot on the elite Discovery crew.
Right, but we're not past this human, definitely.
Or is it the Shenzo crew?
I think she was on the Shenzo. Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, by the way, confirmed, Section 31 show is coming. Yes. They're starting to film this year, Giorgio.
I don't know if this is the best place to crowbar this in, but patreon.com/StarTrekPod. If you guys are wanting a little bit more discussion than what we've given you here, please join us over on the Slack channel. If you give $2 an episode at patreon.com/StarTrekPod, you will get an invite to our exclusive sexy. No, stop.
Why did you go there?
Yeah, back off that one.
It's just like, you know, a regular chill Slack group.
Totally chill.
Slack and chill. That's what we say. Yeah. So come join us over there. $2 for the Patreon pledge. And you're also supporting.
You could even do $1. Well.
You could.
But if you do $2, you get invited to the Slack channel.
Yeah, you should do upgrade to the two. It's going to be more bang for your buck. You got to stop with the things I'm saying.
Yeah. I don't know where you're going.
Everything's a double meaning.
So we'll be back next week, probably live as well, with Mariah with us as well. I really want to get her deeper perspective on this.
I'll be out next week.
Oh, Clyde will be out next week. Yeah.
We will beam you out, beam her in.
I don't have that technology.
No. I can't wait for all four of us to be back together.
Okay, but we're going to...
It's a fancy studio. You could do this.
That's all right. We're going to probably do a Patreon episode after this. So if you haven't already joined us on Patreon, please do. Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Go to StarTrekPod.co.co to get all of our episodes. And please give us 5-star ratings and reviews on Apple Podcast. Jordy says give us 5 stars. And... Guys, anything else?
No, I think that's it. This was a lot of fun. We'll be back. Wait, what was our... we had a catchphrase.
Did we now?
What was our catchphrase was for signing out?
Was it maybe...
Warp speed engage, bro, or something.
Warp speed engage, bro, for sure.
Yeah.
I think it was live long and prosper.
That makes a lot more sense.
Live long and prosper.
Sometimes you just have to bow to the absurd.